Skyline Studios, high above Columbus and Wacker Drive. This is Anna DeVlantis. Hope you're having a good day so far. All right, we have a lot to get to on the show today, and let me tell you what's coming up on the show, and also then we have Brent Sopel, former Hawk, you know him. He's standing by here in studio with an incredible story to talk about. He won a Stanley Cup with the Hawks, but it's what he has done after hockey that is getting so much well-deserved attention. The number of people he has helped here in the Chicago area, just growing every day, and truly incredible what his foundation is accomplishing, partly because he's very comfortable telling his own personal story. And we're going to get to that. Also coming up, we'll get you ready for the Bears game, Bears-Cowboys tonight. Jarrett Payton will be stopping by with us, WGN-TV and WGN Radio fame. And we're going to embarrass JP just a little bit, because we have got some audio of him singing along to his kid's favorite cartoon show kind of thing.
That sounds like fun.
It's actually kind of fun.
It's always fun to embarrass people live on the radio.
He actually seems cool somehow when he's doing it. I don't know how he pulls that off, but it's like, oh my gosh, how did he make that sound cool? But it's cute. It's really cute. So we'll talk to JP as the Bears' playoff chances increase from 2% to 3%.
Hey, there we go.
Woohoo!
Forward progress.
We got that going for us. And also, do you read the reviews before you make major purchases online? I know, I do.
You do? No, I totally do.
Even small purchases.
Even if it's like 4.7, I got to see who gave it one or two stars and exactly why. Even if it's an overwhelming positive review, I'm like, well, hold on now. Let's check at the one star.
Let's see the one. I always check the one star.
I got to see what it is because it might be that exact thing that I'm looking out for.
I just bought a printer. Perfect example. And I looked for easy to set up. And I saw easy to set up, easy to set up. I saw it over and over. I'm like, that's my printer. I got it. And maybe we're being fooled because CNET is here to tell us about how some retailers have been called out because more than 50% of their reviews are fake, either generated by employees or some number of other ways they go through, you know, they go through to do this about products, because it can make such a difference, as you might imagine, about sales. If you have a high review, a five-star review, it sells. And four-star, three-star, not so much. So we'll talk about that. Chicago author is here also. She wrote 100 Things to Do in Chicago Before You Die. And she has holiday things to do for you as well.
All right,
but I got to get to this first before we get to Brent Sopel. Did you see this? Today, the Girl Scouts came out with a public service announcement. And I want to get your thoughts. I saw it and I thought, I don't know that this is needed. I don't understand this. And let me read it to you. It's from the Girl Scouts, warning parents, daughters don't owe hugs to anyone during the holidays. So it's this big campaign they unveiled, I think, today with the holiday season right around the corner. The Girl Scouts of the USA is issuing a reminder to parents of girls. She doesn't owe anyone a hug. And they even came with the tweets and the social media campaign. Forced affection equals not okay. Young girls might get the wrong idea, they go on to say, about consent and physical affection if they're told to hug someone instead of doing so out of their own volition. And just because someone gives her a gift doesn't mean you need to force her into hugging. Your thoughts on this, 312-981-7200, is this really needed? I know if my family is, they're huggers, they're even smoochers, they kiss the kids, we all kiss each other, I mean, everyone ends up with lipstick on their faces.
Grandma, grandpa, aunts,
uncles,
yeah.
Everybody hugs, everybody's hugging each other, and nothing feels awkward, we actually tell our kids, hey, go give grandma a hug, she just gave you a present, or thank her. And I understand that consent is important, and I know that the Girl Scouts has been upfront about talking about, this is what they say, setting physical boundaries that can last a lifetime. But when it comes to family celebrations or holiday, you usually know these people. I mean, I don't see any parents just going out and pushing their kids, cringing into the arms of somebody who might be dangerous to them. I've never seen that. But I do see parents all the time, even outside the school. Hey, oh, did you see Margaret just gave you a little gift? Go give her a hug. And that happens all the time. But this campaign, the Girl Scouts are saying pushing girls into hugging people they don't want to can impact their feelings toward themselves.
It's interesting because, look, I mean, I grew up like this, too, where it's like, oh, you got to go give grandma and grandpa a kiss, thank them for the gift that you got them, got to do it. And, like, for the most part, 99% of the people, I believe, are doing it out of best intentions. But I kind of see where they're coming from because the evidence shows that people that are going to do something not okay to a child is going to be someone that they know, someone in their family. And being able to teach them that they have the power to choose whether they're going to hug or kiss someone is up to them. And I feel like what the Girl Scouts are doing is well-intentioned, meaning that since it is sort of a transactional affair, even though it's a donation to a great cause and you're just giving them cookies, I do feel like that is, hey, go hug someone because they bought this thing from you.
Oh, I see what you're saying. A total stranger.
Yes.
Just go hug that stranger.
Because they did X, Y, Z. That's where I feel like it is. There is some smart to that. Yeah.
Yeah, there is. I want to hear from Patricia. Thanks for calling. What do you think about this when you hear, or maybe you heard about it earlier? What do you think? We have
about it. Probably a post on Facebook, but I do agree with the statement only because, you know, my family's a hugger as well, but someone might make the child feel uncomfortable, whether it's a boy or a girl. You know, there could be that aunt, that uncle, the cousin, whatever. So I don't feel that they really need to hug everybody.
All right, Patricia, are you a parent, did you say?
Pardon?
Are you a parent?
I am a parent. I'm a grandparent.
So do you, as a grandparent and a parent, don't you sort of gauge your own kid and if you know if they're comfortable or not? Like, I know if this stranger just came up and offered my daughter something in the park, I wouldn't say, go hug him. Go, you know, go hug. I mean, you just, you know, you gauge your kids. And I didn't know this was a problem.
Well, you know, looking at it now, in retrospect, I mean, my youngest son, of course, he's 30 now, but when he was younger, he was very shy. You know, when family came over, and we had plenty of family gatherings, he would hide. He, you know, he was just very shy, and I would never have meet him go and, well, hug Aunt Susie or hug Uncle Joe because, you know, they gave you something or whatever, or say thank you, yes, for sure. But I don't feel, especially nowadays, I guess everything's coming to light more. So it makes a difference. I would not force my child. You know, I don't think I ever did, actually.
It's
shy children. No. I've had shy children, and I have children that were outgoing, you know, both. So it's like, yeah, and a lot of times you don't know what's going on. They're not saying what's going on. Maybe something happened for them to feel uncomfortable. Maybe not, but they could just be shy.
It's an important point. Thank you, Patricia. Thanks for that.
Sure. Thank you.
We have quickly one more phone call we can get in here, and then we're going to get to Brent Sopel. From the 630, we have another comment.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. We're getting some text lines, too. 815 saying, unfortunately, parents don't always know who is doing something wrong. Even family members. I never made my kids hug anyone anymore. A couple other texts coming in, too.
Nancy, can you tell us what you think real briefly? Because we're going to have to hit the break here. But what are your thoughts? Hi, Nancy. You're on
Hi.
WGN.
How are you?
Good.
I think that this is just bunk because, you know, kids will tell you no, and you have to honor that. Otherwise, if you say to your child, go hug so-and-so, and they willingly do so, it's over. But today we're becoming so amalgamated and so concerned about feelings and emotions and wrecking the kid's psychological state, et cetera, et cetera. I don't think you were wrecked. I know I wasn't.
No. I agree. Thank you, Nancy, for that thought. It's just interesting. I mean, the Girl Scouts obviously had enough evidence here that they felt the need that this was a campaign they wanted to put out there. Remind us. Brent Sopel coming up right after the break here on WGN. All right, live from the Skyline Studios, this is Anna DeVlantis. Here in studio with us is Brent Sopel. You know him as a stud defenseman in the NHL, Chicago Blackhawks, who won a Stanley Cup, by the way. Also a broadcaster, WGN radio contributor. But it's what he's doing off the rink, off the ice, what he's been doing in his personal life since leaving hockey that has really made just a tremendous impact on so many people's lives here in Chicago, the Brent Sopel Foundation.org. Brent, thank you for coming in and talking with us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Dyslexia is the issue. You suffered from it. Your daughter was diagnosed not long ago. And you have a very powerful story about this because you lived with it for so long without even knowing about it.
Yeah, you know, I found out 10 years ago. So it was a long struggle going through school, not knowing exactly what was going on. I was reading at a grade 4 level in high school, so wasn't doing too well. And it's self-esteem is what the biggest problem is with dyslexics. You know, I look to my left, I got this girl whipping through these questions, and I got this guy, and here I am, I can't figure out this word. Or
people thought you were stupid, you said. I read your very powerful, it was a tell-all, pretty much. You wrote about how I don't want a single child to grow up the way I did because I was made to feel as if I didn't matter. I was not capable of doing much at all.
Well, when you,
other
when
than
you,
hockey, obviously.
When you're struggling at whatever that is, you know, for reading, and you look at everybody else isn't. So, you know, what automatically goes in your head? You know, I am dumb. They are right. And it was year after year, year after year. And it was just it was a torture going to school. You know, anytime that I had to do something, you know, I tried to get out of class anyway. I bullied kids. That's the way I, you know, I got my anger and my frustration out with not even knowing that I had something. I just thought I was dumb.
And there's a turning point. There was one moment you mentioned that you were asked to speak in front of the class, and you will remember that for the rest of your life.
Oh, yeah, 100%. About 2 weeks into freshman year, an English teacher said, "Brent, why don't you get up here and read?" I'm like, awesome. And so when I'm up there reading, you know, I'm reading words that aren't there. Now I've got whatever it is, 25 kids laughing at me.
Man.
And I think about that every day.
Every day.
You know, that's a scar that will never, ever go away. And that's exactly why, you know, this foundation exists. This is what I want to prevent. I never want another kid to feel the way I do each and every day.
I think there's a lot of people, sorry to jump in just with one question. I think of, when you think of dyslexia, I think, oh, that's switching a couple letters around.
That's what most of us do.
And then I think, oh, okay, well, kids know about it early on, and then they get treated for it, and they learn to read better or to adjust. But finding out late in life, I mean, is your story common with other people? Have you heard similar stories?
Oh, yeah. My story is very, very common. But, you know, everybody talks about dyslexia. It's, you know, flipping your B's and D's. Well, let me tell you, there's a heck of a lot more than that. You know, for example, you know, reading comprehension. You know, I'm studying so hard at these words to read it that I don't know what I'm reading. Or if there's a big word, if it doesn't sound out and spell the same way, you know, I can't get it.
40 million people in the U.S. affected, 200,000 right here in the Chicago area. You had some statistics as well. A lot of people living with this, and some are keeping it a secret. Some are undiagnosed.
Yeah, you know, it's something that's just, you know, obviously it's kind of like mental health. It's just coming to the surface. So, you know, there's 40 million people, like you mentioned, you know, 2 million know it. So it's educating and trying to get everybody just to understand that there's a lot more than flipping your B's and D's. You know, for example, dyslexia. Some dyslexics don't know their lefts from their rights. You know, so it's just little things like that, fine motor skills. I know one family, they had four dyslexics, mom, dad, and the two kids. They never had glasses, made a glass until the kids were in their 20s because they'd spill it.
You were reading bedtime stories to your kids, and you really couldn't read, so you,
it's really fair. I didn't read those.
You told them bedtime stories,
yeah.
And you just made them up?
Yeah, I had some characters in my head, and, you know, I use those characters every night, you know, in a different form of a story, and that's just, you know, as a dyslexic kid, you figure out ways to get around things, and, you know, it's all, you know, a great way of saying it is that, you know, I fake my way.
Mm-hmm.
And I just have to figure out ways. You know, for an example, as I'm driving down the freeway, I'll tell you every license plate that drives by me because I have to figure out how am I going to fake my next way around the next obstacle.
And it was just that you didn't know what it was, or you didn't want to tell anybody this is that something was going on that you couldn't describe. I mean, I just wonder why it took so long for anyone to understand that this was all it was and that there's treatment for it.
Well, you know, they're still doing that. You know, there's not enough education, you know, to it. So we're at the grassroots of mental health, and especially for dyslexia. Dyslexia is 1 in 5, and it's hereditary. So, you know, you're born with it. You know, there's no pill, there's no shot. That's the way you're born. It's hereditary. So it's not going away, you know, anywhere. It gets passed down. You know, you got autism. Everybody knows what autism is.
Right.
And it's at, I think it's about 1 in 65, and it's not hereditary.
More likely to lead to addiction, drug, alcohol issues, more likely to lead to underemployment, depression, all kinds of things result from it when you're told that you really can't do things all your life.
65% of dyslexics are addicted to drugs or alcohol. And why? You know, to cover that pain. Because you figure that you're not going to amount to nothing. You're told you're not going to amount to nothing. You know, I had one guy reach out to me in third grade. His teacher sat him in the hallway all third grade.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he was dyslexic, he found out.
Oh, my gosh.
Sat in the hallway. And, you know, I always say there's no such thing as a class clown or a bully. There's a reason why.
Figure out what's going on. It's a great point. It really is. Sometimes harder to do than you think. I know you are very involved in your foundation.
Mm, yes.
You respond directly to people's letters, even if they're a number of pages, which must be hard to get through. And you get emails from people. You connect with families. You've got a number of people here in the Chicago area who've reached out to you and found some sort of help.
Yeah, you know what? I'm the one that deals with this every day. You know, so I have some amazing board members that help me. But, you know, I was on the phone today, earlier today, with with a father and a hockey coach, and I talked to parents going into schools. I'll talk to anybody. You know, I live it, so I'm going to pass that message on, and I'm going to, you know, help out any way I can, whatever it is, talking to that kid, just telling him, you know, he's not alone.
Mm-hmm. And that alone helps, doesn't it? It would have helped you, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. You know, it doesn't matter what you are. You know, depression, anything. When you're in the middle of it, you think you're alone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if I can just, you know, anytime I can pass a message to a kid to have, you know, I'm with you. I got you.
And, you know, you have a great reputation here in Chicago. Chicagoans know you and love you. So you speaking out about that must help a lot of people out. My question is that, you know, you mentioned 2 million people know about it versus 40 million people probably suffering from it. I imagine that if every single person that can kind of talk out about this, can kind of spread the word, even everyday people who can say that I'm going through this or I know someone that is, that helps kind of create some momentum towards change, towards fundraising, towards changing the way we're doing things.
Yeah, 100%. But, you know, there's a long way to go. And that's why, you know, I do this every single day. You know, I'll give an example. I had a CEO of a company, 60 years old. He said, I was sitting in the boardroom and I had all my executives doing a presentation. For the first time ever, I told him that to stop, and I need it done this way. And he said, the only reason I could do that is because of you, Brent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's 60 years old.
It's powerful. Brent, we want to promote your organization, allow people to connect with you, know where to go, and know what's out there. Just stick around here for just a minute. We're going to go to a break. Come right back with Brent Sopel here on WGN Radio. My son had a wonderful teacher. She recognized his dyslexia problem in the second grade, probably saved his life. Brent Sopel is here. We just have a few more seconds here. Brent, tell us where people can go, because there are options for people who are battling dyslexia.
Yeah, you know, my foundation is BrentSopelFoundation.org, so you can get on there or social media. And, you know, I answer everything, mm-hmm. you know, whatever that direct message on social media, email. It might take a little bit of time, but, you know, I promise you I'll get back, and I'll do anything I can to help whoever that is. You know, the same statement, it's I don't want another kid to feel the way I do every day. And however I can help, I will.
Well, thank you for getting the word out, too. I know you've been to the White House several times. You're really sort of just making this foundation just reach farther and farther all the time and helping more and more people. So thanks for doing that. Please come back. Tell us about, you have a couple fundraisers coming up, and let us know. We'd like to promote that as well. Thanks for sharing your story.
Thanks for having me.
Anna DeVlantis is here at the Skyline Studios. Continue to get your texts and your calls a little later on. We're going to revisit that subject we introduced at the top of the hour about the Girl Scouts, their new public service announcement campaign. Daughters don't owe hugs to anyone during the holidays. Don't force your daughter to hug anybody. And they go into the risks of teaching consent at a young age. And we are getting some texts from people who say that they understand this. Before we were sort of thinking,
I thought I'd be on an island.
Necessary. I thought you were on an island too. I didn't know it was necessary, because I feel like at family parties and things like that, you know who's who, and you keep track of you kind of look at your own kid and say, okay, they're not comfortable. I'm not going to tell her to hug anybody.
Mm-hmm.
But here, I cringe thinking about how uncomfortable I was as a little girl having people hug me that I didn't know or didn't see often, especially uncles. When I've seen media videos of certain people, like even Joe Biden, you know, that's a different age, hugging people. I can't believe it. It's haunting to her. That brings back some bad memories to her. So there's people who did have bad experiences and were asked to hug, and they didn't feel comfortable hugging. So thank you for your text, and we're going to get back to calls later on. Right now, though, with us, Chicago author Molly Page. She has a book, 100 Things to Do in Chicago Before You Die, and she also has some ideas about what to do in Chicago for the holidays before you die. And, you know, a lot of holidays left, hopefully, for you.
So this is the last one.
Do it
start
all.
Studying.
Everything. Get it all in, Molly. Where should we start?
Oh, there's tons of things to do around the city this season. I think it's easy when it starts to get chilly to want to hibernate, stay on the couch.
Yeah.
You know,
it is so easy. Watch some TV, some good,
right.
Like some good holiday stuff.
Right, right.
My mother-in-law watches the Hallmark Channel constantly.
Sure.
Lots of holiday
programs. Sure, sure. And, you know, Netflix, everybody's competing now. Everybody's mm-hmm. got those holiday films out. But we want to get people outside doing some things in the city, right? One of my favorite things to do is checking out caroling at Cloudgate.
Oh, I did that once. It was so good.
Yes, it's really, really fun. Friday nights starts at 6 o'clock, and it's kind of a combination between a concert and going caroling.
Mm-hmm.
You have to do less work, though. You're not knocking on doors. Just stand there. Sing.
Caroling without the awkward hello, right. Yes.
Are there professional singers there?
Yes.
Too?
Each okay. week, every Friday night, they bring in a different group and they will hand out, the folks there will hand out the words.
Good.
So you know what you're singing along. And so you can just watch and listen if you'd like, or if you're like me and you want to belt it out, you definitely have the opportunity
so
to
tomorrow,
do that.
So it's Fridays.
Friday night, yeah. So there's one tomorrow night, 6 o'clock. Mark Hubbard and the Voices will be there tomorrow night. And then next week, the Chicago Children's Choir.
You definitely need the book, because I tried to sing Good King Wenceslas without it once.
I didn't even pronounce that.
Yeah,
right?
I don't think I did. And it didn't go well. Yeah. I just murmured through most of it.
That's helpful.
Right, right.
What else do you have, Molly? What are some other ideas for us?
Let's see. Another fun thing that I try to do every year is ice skating at Maggie Daly.
Mm, I love
that.
So
you can actually pair those two together, right? Go sing a little bit and then take a little walk over to Maggie Daly Park and do some ice skating. And what I was really excited to find this year on their website is that they are posting the times that the Zamboni is going through. So I don't know
why
if you...
Why is that?
Well, so...
Kids like that?
Takes a break.
Well, yeah, yes, because... For people like me that have had incidents where they walk up, they finally get all bundled up to go ice skating, they show up at the rink, they walk up to get in line,
the Zamboni comes out.
Because it's not very fast. The thing moves pretty slow.
Yeah, especially at Maggie Daly, because, you know, I think it's like a
half ribbon.
Mile. Yeah, that ribbon is long. And so it takes, I think, more than 30 minutes to run that thing. Mm. So if you walk up and the Zamboni is pulling out on the ice, it's like,
People are used to the United Center, yeah, where there's two of them running at the same time. They don't do that here.
Right. So it's free, but you have to rent skates.
Correct. And actually, too, another thing that they've added this year, they're doing a fast pass. Mm. So if you get on their website, you can... it's not so free.
Mm-hmm.
You give the Parks District a little bit of money, and then you have a time that you can just walk right on. You don't even have to bother with that line.
Ooh, it's like Disney World, right?
Exactly.
So I also know I do holiday magic at Brookfield Zoo. I know zoos, and they have the zoo lights. That's really fun, and Morton Arboretum does stuff, too. What else? Do you have anything outside of the Chicago, or just in the suburbs or anything like that? Anything you want to tell us about there? Or is it all exclusively Chicago?
I put mostly Chicago stuff because I live in this area. Mm-hmm. So this is my hood. That's right. I can say, I know you mentioned the zoo lights out in Brookfield, and I've heard that that's wonderful. Zoo lights at Lincoln Park, you know, is absolutely free.
Yeah.
And they offer different themed nights. So tomorrow night, I think, is like a brew night.
Mm-hmm.
Tomorrow night is holidays. So you can get, it's an adults only evening where they have like beer and cocktails. And then the following Friday is another adults night. But then they also have family nights where kids eat free every Monday night. You can ride the train for free. You can ride the carousel for free. So Zoo Lights is a great thing to do.
I did Brew Lights last year.
Okay, what'd you think?
It was a Thursday night.
Uh-huh.
I had to take Friday off work. I had pre-planned that. I had pre-planned it, being on the morning show. It was awesome. They had all these local craft breweries set up, and you go to different stations. You got a little tickets. That was the only thing, is you had to take off your gloves to rip off this particular ticket. That was the only annoying thing, but it was so cool to try. If beers and craft beers is your thing, to be able to kind of see the animals, all the lights, and take little tastings along the way, it's good.
And you
have
to deal with the kids, let's face it. You can have an adult night over
Thursday
there.
Thursday nights, yeah, absolutely.
Right,
so
Molly,
tonight, get out there.
Oh, good. What else do we have?
You know, Chicago is such a theater city, and there's so many great shows to see. I think everyone knows about A Christmas Carol at the Goodman, and everyone knows about the Nutcracker, Joffrey's Nutcracker that they do. But there are a few shows that I like to see each year that are a little less known and maybe, again, gearing towards adult crowds, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the Q Brothers Christmas Carol at Chicago Shakespeare is a really, really fun show. It's all rap. And really a lot of fun. Also, Santaland Diaries at the Goodman Theater. So Santaland Diaries is based on a David Sedaris short story about when he moonlighted as a Santa's elf. And so that one's definitely adults only. The Q Brothers is all ages pretty much, but Santaland Diaries definitely adults only. And then this one is fun for the whole family. The Steadfast Tin Soldier at the Looking Glass. It's just about an hour long. I'll tell you, I don't think there's any dialogue in the show. It's puppetry and dancing. It's really, really beautiful. At Looking Glass Theater.
That sounds special. Is that kids, adults, everybody?
Absolutely. This one's a family, geared towards families for sure.
That is so
really
cool.
A great thing to see.
All right. And the other thing I go to is the Winter Wonderfest at Navy Pier, which is a kiddo favorite. It's like a special treat, but it's a really fun thing to do at Navy Pier. Do you have anything else that's kind of down in the museum district? Are there anything over there?
Well, let's see. What is on my list in the... Nothing in the museum district, but the symphony is near there,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Chicago Symphony, they do a ton of holiday events. In fact, this weekend, the symphony's playing with Home Alone, so they'll screen Home Alone.
Right.
That's a fun thing for families, especially
that is.
For kids that aren't sure about the symphony. Maybe a way to introduce kids to a symphony experience.
It's got a great score, that movie, too, with the full orchestra. Oh, just used so well. Plus Chicago connections. Come on.
Absolutely.
Got to go to that. That's on the list.
Yeah. For younger kids, the symphony does something called Once Upon a Symphony.
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing a story called The Boy and the Violin. And it's storytelling, more live storytelling and music, about an hour-long program, so short for shorter attention spans, right?
Like mine, yeah.
Right?
Don't just say that's just for kids. That's for adults, too.
Totally is.
I got brew lights to get to.
Yeah, so now, we've covered some kids' things, right? But there are a bunch, and I'm sure maybe you will be able to share with us some of the ones that you've been to, but there are so many Christmas-themed pop-up bars around the city.
Oh.
So the Christmas Club is kind of the most well-known one. It's two stories worth of Christmas decorations in Wrigleyville,
yeah.
Right? Just all your holiday cheer in one place. And what's great about the Christmas Club is there's no cover charge. So you can save that money on the cover charge to either spend on holiday libations or maybe get yourself an ugly Christmas sweater to wear.
If you don't know where they are, I live in Wrigleyville. You just walk up and down Clark Street. Every single bar has now turned into a pop-up.
And we should define that because they're normal bars that are there, but they really do it up for the holidays and make it really spectacular to just be there, just take in the atmosphere.
Well, and so, yes, so there's decorations, there's holiday-themed drinks, they're playing music. Some of these places even hire actors to come in with their holiday spirit to kind of add to the ambiance.
So it's like going to the theater.
Yes,
theater and a drink.
It.
Perfect.
Molly, thank you so much for sharing these. Your book that people need to go out and get is 100 Things to Do in Chicago Before You Die. Molly Page is the author. She's also a docent with the Chicago Architecture.
Yes, Chicago Architecture Center.
Oh my gosh. You got to come back again and share more ideas with us. So thank you.
I would love that.
Thank you so much, Molly, for these awesome ideas for the holiday. Those are a lot of things that were not on my radar at all. So really cool research you do there. Thanks, Molly.
Thanks for having
me. More to come here on WGN Radio. So, all right, we continue to talk about the Girl Scouts and this new PSA. Coming up at 2 o'clock, Heidi Stevens and Dr. John Duffy are going to be here. They are going to tackle this topic. We're going to take your calls and talk more about it because there is a lot to say about it. The Girl Scouts warning parents, daughters don't owe hugs to anyone during the holidays. They've launched this campaign, and it's getting some mixed reaction. So glad to hear you're revisiting this in a little while, the 630. It occurred to me also that the main point is not whether each individual hug is okay or not, but the point is let children, boys or girls, know that they have the right to control their own bodies. Say no when they want to. Keep it coming. We're going to, again, as I said, 2 o'clock hour, we'll be talking more about this. But right now, we need to talk to Ben Fox Rubin, the senior reporter for CNET News in Manhattan. He's reporting on all things retail, and this has to do with an interesting story about fake reviews and how to spot them and why that's important. Ben, how you doing?
Good, good. Thanks for having me.
So this one sort of surprised me because the numbers, there was like a high percentage connected to certain big retailers that we all shop at with fake reviews. And I got to say, I'm somebody who reads the reviews. I rely on the reviews to make my choices for purchasing. And that seemed like a really high number. I always expect there are a few in there, but it seemed like there's more than we knew before and more than we expected.
Yeah, I actually talk to a lot of merchants that sell on Amazon through their third-party service, and they tell me that it's actually incredibly easy to get fake reviews if you want them. There are a lot of Facebook groups out there that incentivize people to get free or deeply discounted products for posting positive reviews. So it's really important for customers to realize and understand that, because you should be going into reading those reviews knowing and expecting that there may be certain listings, not all listings, but certain listings that are going to be substantially filled with fake reviews.
Now, you said, is there a way to spot them? Is there a way to figure out when you're searching for a product to say, wow, a lot of these are going to be fake? I mean, I'm not going to go piece by piece to look at them, but is there another way to do that?
So there are two websites that are really credible and very useful, and I've used at least one of these before. FakeSpot is the one that I've used. It's a free service, and it's actually used for Amazon, Yelp, TripAdvisor, Walmart, and Best Buy, and I think a couple of other ones. So I would definitely recommend at least taking the URL, putting it into FakeSpot.com, and seeing if you get a large percentage of fake reviews according to their algorithm. The other one is ReviewMeta. So you could at least try out those two different tools, and if they come back with a lot of red flags, you at least know, okay, that's some food for thought to consider, that maybe these reviews aren't 100% kosher.
FakeSpot is the one you said. FakeSpot, and that is, did you say it's an app? Something you can download?
It's a website. Just go FakeSpot.com. It's the same thing with ReviewMeta, actually.
Okay, ReviewMeta and FakeSpot are two of them you can look at. So if you're searching for products, do you have any kind of information about how often people do read the reviews? I saw something about how on Amazon alone, if you have below a 4-star review, your sales go down dramatically, and it increases dramatically also for each 0.5-star you have.
It is definitely. So I don't have very specific detailed information about this, but Amazon does tell me that it is one of their most popular services, and there's a very good reason for that. It really started with the idea that fellow customers were telling other customers, hey, I really like this product, or you should look at this. The problem is that as it became more popular, some nefarious characters and bad actors decided that they wanted to find different ways to game the system. Amazon has done a lot to try to curb fake reviews. But like I said before, some of this populates or it starts off on Facebook, so it's happening off of their website. Sometimes it's really easy to catch fake reviews on your own. Now, granted, that does take a little bit more homework, like you said, that some people don't want to just start trolling through all the reviews. But if there's a lot of misspellings, if it seems like somebody has just written a bunch of gobbledygook in there and they've given it a 5-star rating, or if it's for a separate product, sometimes it's really obvious or really comes off that, hey, this isn't what it's supposed to be, or this doesn't actually look accurate. So I would say there are sometimes easy ways to notice that there are fake reviews on a particular listing.
I noticed on some sites, people will say, by the way, I was offered a free product in order to review it. And they'll say that. And I always feel like that's fair. Okay, that makes sense. But that's only, I think, on one or two of the shopping sites that I go to. You really don't see that, but it sounds to me as if, from what you're telling us, that could be widespread, that often you can go to these Facebook groups or you can connect with certain populations who automatically review a product, and then you think you're getting legit reviews, but you're not.
Right. And what's complicated there is that some of those programs are totally legit, and they operate through Amazon, and Amazon says that these are okay. Others operate more as a black hat operation or more in a gray area, and Amazon doesn't condone them. So it does make it a little bit more difficult for consumers to actually gauge and understand that. But you will see, as you mentioned, specifically on Amazon, that there are some programs where people will say, hey, I got this for free, or I got this through a discount through this specific sanctioned Amazon program. And yeah, that's really useful for transparency's sake. And the folks that are involved in those programs tend to be more legitimate, and they take those reviews very seriously. So I would probably say that those are generally okay to pay attention to and, you know, take stock in.
This first popped over the sort of Cyber Monday weekend, and I know FakeSpot was behind some data. They're the ones that you mentioned that track this, and you can use them, actually. You can go to their site, and they'll sort of rate different retailers and tell you, I guess they provide a letter grade based on the total number of reviews and how many are reliable or unreliable, as the case may be. They said on a recent search on Walmart, just over 50% of Walmart reviews were authentic and unreliable. Unauthentic and unreliable. More than 50% were ultimately fake reviews. That seems so high to me.
Yes, It does. It does. And that's embarrassing for Walmart, obviously. Walmart is the world's biggest retailer, and they're really competing very hard in e-commerce. I would suggest, at least theoretically, that this is because Walmart hasn't paid as close attention to its e-commerce business in recent years as some other players like Amazon or eBay. But at the same time, they do need to clean it up, just like Amazon does. Amazon, they say that it's a small percentage of their total reviews that are fake, but I think even they would admit that they still have a lot of work to do to make sure that as many or as perhaps even all their reviews are legitimate and fair.
One of the things I always do is I'll look at the 5-star reviews, and then I'll try to look at the 1 or 2-star reviews to say, okay, what did people find wrong with this, and see if there's some sort of theme. You know, like it broke 2 days after I bought it. It was, you know, faulty. I'm returning it. This is terrible. And you look for that. I mean, I don't know. Is that a good way around it? I don't know how else you do it unless you use this FakeSpot, use what FakeSpot has to offer or some of these other services. I guess there are ways to sort of look at them and say, you know, these don't seem quite right.
Yeah, I would say that if a product seems relatively new and only has 5-star reviews and has several dozen of them, that's immediately suspicious to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's getting no 1-star or 2-star reviews. That's a problem. The issue that I have with the 1-star and 2-star reviews, which granted is more of a personal thing, is that there always seems to be somebody that has a problem with any given product, service, or restaurant, which is why, I don't know, I sometimes bristle over looking at them that, you know, regardless of what you're looking at, somebody is unhappy with it. So I try to take those things with a grain of salt. What I would recommend is that there are also outside organizations, not to plug CNET too much, but there are professional review sites like CNET, like Wirecutter, that will review certain products. So you will also get some more authoritative information about any specific product. Now, granted, that's not all the millions of products that you can find on these websites, but that's at least another tool that you might be able to utilize as well.
I go to CNET all the time. I totally do, especially electronics. But you guys also go into housewares too, don't you? I noticed that recently.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We've been doing that much more often. And to plug a competitor, just to be fair, Wirecutter also does a lot of houseware. They do spatulas, yard tools. So the review sites are really trying to expand out and do a lot more areas, because exactly what we're talking about, people want authoritative information about
right.
this stuff. Sometimes the reviews can be questionable. I would say that it is important or it is helpful to look at the reviews, but again, if it's only got 5-star reviews, there are no 1-star or 2-star reviews. I would immediately be suspicious about that. And so hopefully some of these different tools could be helpful for people and doesn't really slow them down too much, obviously,
yeah.
because I know people ultimately want to buy things and
right.
they don't want to spend, you know, so much time researching.
Ben, you're too kind. Go to CNET, not the competitors. That's the place to go. Ben Fox Rubin, senior reporter for CNET News in Manhattan. Thanks for weighing in on this, Ben. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
How to spot fake reviews. We're going to come back with more on that Girl Scouts PSA discussion coming up here on the show. Heidi Stevens, Dr. John Duffy join us to participate in that discussion. And we'll be asking you as well, 312-981-7200, more about that. The news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Live from the Skyline Studios, this is Anna DeVlantis. We've been talking about the Girl Scouts PSA. Daughters don't owe hugs to anyone during the holidays. They came out with this today. It's a social media campaign as well. Forced affection equal not okay. Don't give your girls the wrong idea about consent and physical affection. If they're told to hug someone instead of doing so out of their own volition, it's not a good thing. Just because somebody gives them a gift doesn't mean they have to get a hug. And we've been talking about it, and thank you for your text. We'd like to get your calls, too, 312-981-7200. Do you have a thought about this? A friend of ours' daughter sometimes doesn't want to give hugs, 708, when her mother says to. If she won't give hugs, I'll ask for a high five, and that's okay. That's a good idea. You can do that. If she's not, I think we all kind of read our kids, too. I think that's a piece of this. But some people are saying that there were creepy members of their family, even, that they were forced to hug. And a number of you are saying, please include the boys in this, too. It's not just about the girls. It's just because it's a Girl Scout message that that's the way it was delivered. Dr. John Duffy is here, clinical psychologist, parenting and relationship expert, just when we need you. Heidi Stevens, you know her and you love her from the Chicago Tribune, parenting and lifestyle columnist. You guys, what is your read on this whole thing? You hear about the campaign, and what do you think? Go ahead, Heidi. I'm sorry. There you go. Now you can speak.
This is on. I love this campaign.
This thing on.
Yeah, I love the campaign. And actually, it's been around for a few years.
Right.
They bring it out every year around this time because, you know, family gatherings are becoming, you know, the populating everyone's calendar. I think it's a fantastic idea. I think it's a fantastic message for boys and girls to learn early on that they are in charge of their body, who touches their body, who they touch with, you know, their young body, and that a gift or a compliment or a visit from someone you don't see very often does not have to equal your physical affection. You can say thank you. You can say great to see you. You can offer a high five. I think that's a wonderful solution. But I think it's incredibly important to help kids connect that really young, that like I don't have to offer my touch if I don't want to.
Yeah, John, what's your take on it?
I actually agree completely with that. Mm-hmm. I think it's important now more than ever for kids to know that they have full agency and empowerment over their own bodies, regardless of circumstances. Not that they shouldn't be gracious and grateful, and I love the idea of the high five or the fist bump, but the mandatory hug, having worked with kids who have been sexually abused in some way or just not treated very well by some adults, you don't always know what their backstory is and what their reluctance might be. And to press them into doing that could be re-traumatizing. And I know the snowflake argument against that, but I got to tell you, from a clinical perspective, mm-hmm. that doesn't hold a lot of water.
But what about in holiday parties? We usually know all the people at those parties. They tend to be family members or close friends. And is it wrong just to say, hey, go give, you know, Uncle So-and-so or go give our friend Joe a hug. He just gave you a gift. I mean, is that you don't like that even by its very on its very premise?
I just don't think that the feelings of the grown-ups have to be paramount here. I think the feelings and the message that we're sending to our kids has to be what's paramount. I think if a grown-up has his or her feelings hurt by, you know, a 7-year-old girl not hugging him or her, that grown-up needs to examine that. I don't think the parent needs to play that game. I think the parent needs to say, Joe, she's 7. So like, go, you know, have some more eggnog. I think that's your turn to cut that off and say like, bud, this one's not about you. This is about the way I'm parenting my kids. This is about the message I want my kid to grow up around. And I don't think it's about, you know, how is that going to make the grown up feel? I think it's got to be about how is this going to make the kid feel?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't think it's about familiarity per se, right? I think it's really about giving your kid agency over how they are with other people. You know what I mean? And what agency they have over their lives, over their bodies with other people, even if they're really close to them. They get to decide how that goes, especially physically, you know, and that's not licensed to be, I'm thinking about what the backlash would be. That's not licensed to be rude. That's not licensed not to be gracious, but it is licensed to say, you know, I'll handle this the way that's most comfortable for me.
It's also not calling into question anyone's motives. You're not saying, I don't trust you around my kid. I don't trust your hug. It's not about whether you trust that grown-up or not. It's about the message you want your kid to get, which is that hugs are his or hers to give or not give. So it's not about like, yeah, I don't know about Josephine. She seems a little icky. Don't hug her. You don't feel like you have to hug her. It's like, she's another human, and don't feel like you ever have to hug another human you don't want to hug. It's not anything about their specific motives or personality.
262, I'm 59. No one ever molested me, but I hate hugging. I'm a pretty well-adjusted person. I just hate my personal space invaded. I'll hug certain people, my kids, my husband. I just don't like it. You should never force someone to do anything they're not comfortable with. I find it horrible. This is 815. I find it horrible you're introduced to something they think is okay to hug you and you try to avoid it. Others act like you are antisocial. So it's sort of like you're not allowed to make the choice when people go in for the hug, and maybe kids feel that way too.
Yeah.
It's like they're being sort of forced to do it. I mean, I got to say, my family, they do hug, but it's sort of those are the rules. When everybody comes over, everybody's like hugging and smooching each other, and they do it. And I never see any of the kids feeling uncomfortable. They kind of smile like, oh, gosh, that's my Uncle Rich. He always gives me the big bear hug, and he always gives me the kiss or whatever. And they don't, should I be worried about them? And they seem like it's okay. It's okay in those circumstances.
Yeah. Well, you know, it probably is. I'm sure you know your kids. I I would be tempted probably to have the conversation, you know, later, apart from any family gathering, just in case there are other situations where they don't love that. You know, they go over to somebody else's family gathering, or they go into school, or they go somewhere. You know, I think I'd be tempted still to find a way to say, like, you know how we all get together and we just go ahead and hug and kiss? You know, you don't have to do that, right? Like, you know, if that ever feels creepy or just like you're not in the mood, you know, you have that right, right? To say no to that. Like, you know that, don't you? I mean, I think I would. Probably.
That's a fair conversation to have, right? I guess I need to have that really soon.
And shifting the onus to adults, even in that circumstance a little bit, I have a good friend, and in the wake of what's gone on in the last few years, in terms of gender, he has found himself asking anybody that he is inclined to hug, and he's a hugging guy, anybody, including me, he'll say, may I hug you? You know, like, he'll take this moment, and at first it felt a little awkward, but still really appreciated. Mm-hmm. Now it feels completely organic, you know, and he'll ask his daughters, like, you know, may I hug you? You know, like, yeah, Dad, go ahead. Once in a while, it's like, no.
Thanks. The no answer is okay too. Dr. John Duffy and Heidi Stevens are with us. We'll continue this conversation. 312-981-7200. Let us know your thoughts about the hugging and the PSA from the Girl Scouts, and we'll return with more coming up here on WGN Radio. Dr. John Duffy is here. Heidi Stevens is here, and we're taking your calls about this PSA from the Girl Scouts. I want to talk to Aaron. Aaron, you're on WGN. What do you have to say about this PSA? What do you think?
There.
Hi.
Well, I think it's about the Girl Scouts. I think it's like you guys said, it's about, you know, knowing your kids and what's comfortable for them. But I had a question because I have a brother-in-law. My family is very huggy, and I have a brother-in-law who isn't, and he purposely shows us that he doesn't want to hug us. But he comes in for the hug anyway.
Oh, no. Is it like in a funny way? Does anyone think it's laughing and funny? Or they don't like, they're like, no, thank you. So what do you do?
Well, you can practically see him roll his eyes when he comes to give us a hug. So I've kind of said before, we don't need to hug.
Right.
you don't need to hug me, but he still comes in for it.
See,
so I just don't know, like, is there a proper way that's not rude that I could say, really, you don't need to hug me? Because he seriously, like, kind of puts his arms out, like, ugh.
Is it kind of a shtick? Like, he kind of wants that to be his... I mean, is he trying to be funny? Or
no.
No.
No, it's, like, totally rude.
Trying to seem put upon.
Well, I already think you've done the one thing that is the right thing to do. You've already given him license to say, no, that's not okay. So if he goes in for the hug, you know, like, I think it's okay to say, okay, you know, you don't... And I would... You might even repeat once or twice, we don't have to do this if you're uncomfortable with it. Like,
not
any
mandatory.
Any other form of affection, you know, I love you.
But what if
we'll
they get
see you next
so
time?
Close, they're already there. You know, they're in. Do you just block them? You know, like, give them the Heisman? I mean, how do you block that?
Right. Well, I guess the question might be, are you comfortable hugging him if he's so uncomfortable being hugged?
No. The whole thing is awkward, and it's like he would love to not hug any of us, but he comes in for the hug with his eyes rolling, and it's just...
Have you talked to his partner about it? Do you feel like that conversation would be useful?
I probably should. It is my sister. I probably should talk to her about that, but, you know, it's been over 10 years that this happens.
Yeah. All right, might be here to talk about it.
Good luck at the holidays.
Thank you, guys. Hope that helps.
Thank you. We have a number of people also just saying this is common. I'm in a hugging family, and my husband's family is not a hugging family, so it's a mixed marriage, and nobody knows what to do, and that's another issue as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, keep your calls coming and your texts. We're going to move on, though, to another issue. You had this great column, Heidi, and you always do. I just follow your work and love it, and I just it's about what I learned about normal around the holidays, and that this whole definition of normal, or looking at other people and thinking that's how it's supposed to be, and that your experience is not that.
Yes.
And so it just creates sometimes some bad feelings.
Yeah, especially this time of year, don't you think? Because everybody's sort of making everything picture-perfect and then sharing those perfect picture-perfect pictures.
Absolutely, right?
Yeah. No, I had this goofy Thanksgiving where I ended up spending it not with my kids and not with a family meal because the weather changed our plans at the last minute. And I just had this sort of epiphany as I was literally driving around looking for an open Denny's, that, you know, I wasn't necessarily feeling envious of everyone who was having their more traditional celebrations. I was just feeling like I was doing something wrong because mine was so abnormal. And, you know, I thought, what is normal, really? Mm-hmm. And this is going to be my new holiday mantra, that there's no such thing as normal. There's no such thing as normal. And I do think, you know, somebody emailed me and said, a normal family is a family you don't know very well. And I think that's a really cool
way
to think of it, right?
Absolutely.
Like, everybody's got their stuff. You just might not be looking close enough, or they might not be letting you in close enough, which is, you know, they're right if you don't know them that well. But normal, probably normal is an illusion.
I just think you can harbor bad feelings and you can feel lonely and isolated if, say, you're going through divorce, you're going through hard times, you don't, and on speaking terms with certain members of your family, if you live away and you're not with your family, you have to work, those kinds of things, you start thinking, oh my gosh, this isn't a holiday. And you see everybody else, you know, seemingly so happy because of the projection of those Instagram photos that make it look like everything's perfect and airbrushed and just absolutely, you know, the best holiday ever. Like it's a Hallmark card or on the Hallmark channel. And you just, it doesn't feel good.
Yeah. You feel like you're doing it wrong. Everyone else is doing it right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And behind the prettiest door, underneath every family tree, there's some dysfunction somewhere. And that seems like such a derogatory, negative word. But truth be told, that's what makes our families interesting. You know what I mean? So that's where normal becomes not that desirable a state, even if it were a state that we could achieve. And it's probably important, especially at this time of year, to celebrate what's unusual about our family, what's unique about our family. And if we're drawn toward, hey, you know what, we're going to have peanut butter and jelly on Christmas Day, we should go that route. We should do whatever funky thing it is that we want to do, and we create our own thing, you know what I mean, our own tradition, and that's okay.
And I guess think at this time to reach out to those friends of yours who might be in those situations where they could be isolated from your family.
That's right.
Ask the question, hey, do you want to join us for our holiday celebration or something like that? I remember working in broadcasting. I was in different towns and I didn't have family and I had to work the holiday, and I would just try to adopt a family. And like someone at the station, the weatherman would have me over and I'm like, hey, how you doing? And it was fine. It was okay. Didn't like not being near my family, but it was still a holiday. Mm-hmm. And I was, thank God somebody asked, because I wouldn't want to sit at home all night and not have a Thanksgiving dinner, right?
Yeah. That's absolutely.
Right. So think about that kind of stuff, right? We also want to talk. I know you had some thoughts, John, because you said you're seeing some clients lately about a little bit of anxiety and feeling these feelings around the holidays, that the also sharing issues of addiction, people who are dealing with all kinds of things at the holidays. Tell us what you're hearing from people when you talk with them.
I think if you are a recovering addict, especially if it's relatively new, I think it's really, really difficult to talk to family and friends around the holidays, or if you've suffered a setback in this past year, some kind of emotional disorder that's fairly visible. I think it's really, really difficult to step into these supposedly normal family situations and friend situations. And people aren't sure oftentimes what to say to people who are suffering, right? So I always encourage people, at the very least, if you know somebody's having a hard time, go up to them and talk to them. You know what I mean? Address them. Because if I've talked to somebody who's in recovery or trying to manage an emotional disorder, what they want more than anything else is not to be dismissed, especially during a difficult time. And this is almost always a difficult time for people going through that.
Mm-hmm. It is tough. You know, the holidays can be overwhelming, right? And there's so much coming at you and that kind of thing. And it's like, you know, just be kind to people. Just be kind. Just think about others at this time. That's part of what it's about. We're going to break here. Be right back with Heidi Stevens and Dr. John Duffy in a moment. Heidi Stevens is here. Dr. John Duffy is here. Last thing we're going to get to, just have a little bit of time. Grandsharenting, it's called, which I don't think is so fair to the grandparents, because I think everyone can share. It's about sharing pictures of your child without your permission. Mm-hmm. How do you, as a parent, how do you navigate that?
So I think it can feel a little phony and stilted to ask your kids permission before you share their picture. It's like, you know, what, all my friends do it? You just want to show my friends how cute you are, or, you know, how cute your new baby is. But the thing I love that Devorah Heitner said to me once, she's the author of Screenwise, she said, like, it's so good to give your kids practice saying no. Like, think of all the times you're going to want them to feel comfortable saying no. Like, do you want to try this drug? Or do you want to get in the car after the driver's been drinking? Do you want to send the sext? Do you want, like, all the times that you want them to be easily, you know, comfortable saying no, like, give them the practice. And so I like to think of it like that. Like, you're just giving them, you know, practice at saying no to something they know they're not comfortable doing.
Dr. John Duffy, clinical psychologist, thank you so much for being here. Heidi Stevens as well from the Chicago Tribune. Thank you, guys. We'll see you again. Live from the Skyline Studios, this is Anna DeVlantis. Jarrett Payton's on the phone as we are previewing the Bears game and talking about much, much more. How are you, JP?
How you doing? Congratulations.
Good. Thank you so much. Thanks for joining us here. So we got the big game tonight. But before we get to that, I did want to use a little piece of audio that we were able to dig up about you. And it's, I think you were humming along to like a children's cartoon song or something like that. Let's listen in.
If they don't stop downloading these Baby Shark songs. That's a knock to it though. Hey, what?
Somehow you made the Baby Shark song sound so cool, Jarrett. I don't know. You were just like jamming in your car there, weren't you?
Anna, let me tell you, it's just amazing to have little kids, right? I have a 7-year-old and a 3-year-old, and to see my son Jaden, we kind of share an account on Apple Music, so anytime that he downloads something, it comes to my phone, and I looked at that Baby Shark song for like 3 or 4 days, and the next thing you know, I turned it on, and I was like, it starts out like the normal one, but it had a hip-hop beat to it, so it started to... And now I'm listening to it all my way to WGN TV, like almost every single day now.
That's your jam now. I saw you post it, so we're not really truly embarrassing you there. You just, I mean, it's just somehow I'm like, Baby Shark. How did he make that seem so cool when he's hanging out in your car to it? It is great having little kids. I want to ask you about the Bears. They play tonight. Cowboys. They're both 6-6. So what do we expect tonight, Jared? What are you looking at?
Oh man, there's so much. Tonight is one of those big nights, because every single time you start to look over this team over the last few weeks, they've always talked about it's the next game. We got to prepare for the next game, keep our heads focused, and that's where they are at this point of the year. At 500 now, they got to figure out a way to be able to put together a nice little winning streak and hope some things can bounce their way. So both teams are in that situation right now. But you look at the Bears tonight; it's all about can they kind of recreate what they did last Thursday in Detroit. And can the offense kind of find ways to put together some drives, especially early, you know, like on the first, second drive, and be able to put points on the board to really help out this Bears defense? Because this Bears defense is going up against an offense that, when you look statistically, they have not only Dak Prescott, who's close to 3,800 yards right now in the season, but also, too, you got Ezekiel Elliott, who's one of the best running backs in the league. And so they don't want to let them control the game on the ground. So that means they got to be able to put some points up early and help their defense out.
You know, the Bears are coming off 3 straight wins, except, and that sounds great, and it is great. I mean, I guess you're right, we're happy for that. But moving forward, the schedule gets much, much tougher.
Yeah, it does. It gets tougher, and I think that's where, you know, Bears fans, they got to have their minds kind of focused not on can this team get to the playoffs, but the next 4 weeks are going to be like playoff games, because you're playing against teams that are going to be in the playoffs right now. So you start to look at it. Can this team kind of keep going in the right direction? Can they finish strong? And we've seen this before, especially Mitchell Trubisky. I mean, he has really, the arrow's pointing up over the last 3 weeks. And last week was his best week in Detroit. Can he do that tonight on the bright lights of Thursday Night Football? He's had an issue in those big-time games of being able to perform, and tonight would be a great night to be able to do that while not only Bears fans are watching, but the whole world is watching, football fans are watching tonight, to be able to put that statement game on film for him, so maybe take a little bit of the pressure off his back.
He's earning certainly some respect in that last game. I think that it would be nice to see him continue to develop, because a lot of people were giving up on him entirely. I was at one game where people were booing him in the first quarter. I was like, oh my gosh, let's give him a little bit of a chance, just a little bit. I mean, you've seen it too, the reaction from fans. I mean, Bears fans were very passionate.
Yeah, and you know what's hard for him, because he's a great young man. He just needs more time to be able to And I know people are like, well, he's got had some time. Well, you know what? I knew from the beginning when he was drafted it was going to be a project, and maybe this season hasn't started out the way that Bears fans probably would have hoped. But I know one thing, though. He's tough, man, and his teammates, they got his back. So there's something to say there. I've been in a lot of locker rooms. I've seen when guys don't believe in guys or they've maybe given up on guys and the way that they say stuff. I'm getting sound from this team during the week and after games. They believe in him. He believes in himself. And there was a video the Bears posted from that last Thursday in Detroit when they had him mic'd up, and you can hear him talking on the sidelines to his guys. It's cool to be able to hear that side of him, because that's the reason what he does in those moments. His game is hopefully getting better, but what he does on the sidelines, in that locker room, in that huddle, those guys, they want to go to battle for him every single game.
His relationship with Nagy, it just seems like it's so intense, and he gets right there in his helmet, and he's like screaming at him. I'm like, I guess is that effective? Does that work? Does that work as a player?
It all depends. There's some players that love it. There's some guys that love it. There's some guys that you don't have to get in their face. You just kind of maybe have to give them a glance. But it's something to say about not only a head coach, but the guy that calls the plays, and with his quarterback, and there is a relationship there. And let's not forget, I mean, not only are we dealing with a quarterback that is still trying to find his way, but Matt Nagy didn't come in as this had all this head coaching experience underneath his belt. He's learning on the job as well. This is his second year calling plays full time. And so for him, he's learning as well. And these guys are learning together. So I know fans have been saying that they're giving up on him. I just hope that they really just kind of watch the progression. Hopefully we see that in the next four games, and it's starting tonight, that they can give this man a little bit more credit and some breathing room, because in my heart, I know Bears fans want things changed. I honestly, in my heart, I don't see anything changing, especially not even next year.
So can you explain something to me here, Jared? Okay, so there's this story that made news this week about how Mitch Trubisky is playing better than Tom Brady. And then they go to the stats, and I'm like, wait, how could that be possible? I rejected that headline. I mean, there's no way. And then everybody's talking about it. I thought, well, how could that be? What are they talking about?
I did see it too. I saw it on Instagram, right? So mm-hmm. it was a picture, and I was going through my Instagram. And next thing you know, I saw it, and I'm like, wait a minute, I did a double take. Even though the Pats are 10-2 right now, Tom Brady's having some issues right now, especially on the offensive side of the ball, with not having a lot of skilled position guys with a lot of experience. And so they're dealing with their own issues, so he's not putting up the numbers. Right now that team is led by a really, really good defense, and they got exposed last week, but still, really, really good defense. And you have to see right now, I mean, over the last three games, we've seen Mitchell Trubisky's arrow on the way up, and his biggest issue since he put on a Bear jersey is that he has been so inconsistent. And so you see it for a game or two. The great ones, the ones that are the Tom Brady's, the Drew Brees's, these guys, they do this on a throwing over 300 yards every single game, mm-hmm. and they're consistent. We want to see consistency, and so that's why I'm saying tonight is such a big night for number 10. Can he put it together in front of the home crowd? I've been at these games too. It's tough to hear people.
It is tough.
Booing. It's tough to hear people booing your team, players, and guys that you. I love this team. I know everybody says they love the Bears. Like, I bleed orange and blue. Like,
no,
since I've been a kid, I love this team. So for me, not only as a fan, but to cover this team, it hurts. And so we all want the best from this team. We all had expectations for this season. It hasn't turned out the way that we hoped. But it's not over yet. I want to see how this team finishes, and if they can do that, I've always had faith in them, because defensively, I know how good they've been. I knew they wouldn't be as good as last year, but this is a good defensive team, so offense just got to be able to pick up the slack just a little bit.
Well, speak to that. We just have a minute left here, but the Nate Silver from 538, that's website that tracks big data for politics and sports and all kinds of things, moved the Bears up playoff potential chance from 2% to 3%. Hmm. Not great. I mean, but I guess are we really thinking playoffs this year? Or you just want to see massive, major development and a trend line that goes in the right direction?
Oh, so you're saying you have a chance.
Very remote.
I'm not worried about playoffs right now. I'm just worried about seeing progression. I just want to see this team get better. I want to see them end on a good note. And if that happens, then by some way, it's a great thing. But Just watching this team grow, especially on offense, they got to find a way to kind of keep getting better. If they can do that, this defense has the next couple of years where they're going to be that good, where they can be in a chance for a title hunt.
I know yesterday was the anniversary of the Super Bowl shuffle, and it was good to see your beloved father, Walter Payton, dancing again. Every time you see that, ever get old there, Jarrett?
No, it love never it. Gets old, and I just love it. This guy today came up to me crying, talking about my dad. It's just amazing to see the impact that he's made on people in Chicago.
A lot of love. Thank you, Jarrett Payton. We love you, too, so thanks for checking in with us.
No problem. Congratulations again.
Thank you. More coming up here on WGN Radio. Back here live in the Skyline Studios, it's Anna DeVlantis, and we were talking earlier about the Girl Scouts PSA. They were revisiting it. It has been out there in years past, but they're reminding you, parents, daughters, don't owe hugs to anyone during the holidays. We have been having a discussion about this throughout the show today. Thank you for your thoughts. 702, as a grandmother who adores her grandchildren and has always gotten hugs from them, it broke my heart when one of the granddaughters, had the touch conversation with her Girl Scout troop and then refused to hug me anymore. Oh, that's sad. Very sad. So a lot of people have, had weighed in on this particular thing. Lauren, were you a Girl Scout?
No. Do I seem like one?
No, you don't. You seem like you're in some kind of Jedi camp learning like martial arts or something.
If only it existed back then.
So it's interesting to just see that they're putting that out, reminding people about it before the holidays. And that's something to think about. Okay, other things going on. We've got Christmas gifts, trending stories right now. Christmas gifts better received when they're badly wrapped.
Yeah. Apparently they don't have high expectations if you are given a badly wrapped present.
It's interesting because it's slapping a nice bow on that last minute gift of socks this Christmas. Won't make it better. Socks alone is not going to make it that great. I mean, how well received is that going to be? But it'll make it worse. Researchers at University of Nevada found wrapping presents too neatly inflates the expectations of what's inside. I guess that's true. If you ever open a box that's just so perfectly wrapped and then it was something kind of small and you're like, oh.
Yeah, chocolate. That happens a lot with chocolate.
Yes, because they're professionally wrapped when you buy them in the store. You're like, oh, great, this is already wrapped. I'm going to grab that.
Right.
And you're like, ooh.
I was thinking like a bracelet.
Our research found when gifts are wrapped neatly and given, or someone accidentally puts it in a Tiffany's bag, but it's really like some homemade jam or something.
That's a no-no.
I love homemade jam, but the expectation level gets up really high. You're like, oh, what could that be? Our research found that when gifts are wrapped neatly, given to a friend, it raises expectations of the gift inside, resulting in our friends liking the gift less. However, with sloppy wrapping apparently the way to go, our friends set their expectations lower and will actually like the gift more. All right.
I won't try so hard this year, I guess.
Yeah. This is so they went through it all and they kind of looked and asked people how they felt. So don't try so hard. Wrap it really messy and they'll be like, oh my gosh, what a beautiful Tiffany ring you just gave me. Did you see this one too? Senator Elizabeth Warren, she is out scolding Michael Bloomberg, fellow Democrat in the race for president. So she's talking about how he's spending too much money and that's not fair and that's un-American. He's buying the presidency. We have
and
a little.
That's why I'm so concerned about Michael Bloomberg jumping into this race, dropping $37 million in 1 week on ad buys. I don't believe that elections ought to be for sale. And I don't think as a Democratic Party that we should say that the only way you're going to get elected, the only way you're going to be our nominee, is either if you are a billionaire or if you're sucking up to billionaires.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing to say. I don't know that the money alone gets you elected. It certainly can help. I mean, I don't think he has an exposure problem. I know a lot of TV and radio stations are very happy in the Chicago and Illinois and Midwestern area because he's even dumping a lot of money here. I mean, it just seems like he's worth $50 billion. Someone like that has a lot of money, $100 million reportedly right out of the gates just to sort of start putting the ads out there.
Well, I'd also say it's sad that really that is the reality. The political system does center around money a lot. So elections are bought. That's kind of how it's always been.
Do you feel better, though, when it comes from the small dollar donors? You know, you hear Bernie Sanders is mocked about that. The average donation is $17. And it feels sometimes more, I don't know, it feels better that way than if a billionaire moves in and just sort of starts unloading a bunch of money. Now, he's late to the race, so he's probably also thinking, Yeah, he's got to.
Yeah, catch up.
Catch up a little bit. But she actually has several ads out. She's paying for ads to say how he doesn't really, this is not the right way to go about things. And that, you know, he's not, this is, you shouldn't be buying an election. Shouldn't be doing it. So it's interesting. There's also that whole sidebar issue about Bloomberg deciding not to really cover Bloomberg himself in a matter, a number of issues, and saying, well, to be fair, because we're not covering the guy who founded the company and the 3,000 plus journalists who work for Bloomberg are not really covering everything to do with Bloomberg, we'll also say we're not going to cover any of the other Democratic candidates running against him. I don't know that that is fair. I really don't. I mean, you're not going to investigate anything to do with him, his foundation, his life, anything. You're not allowed to investigate that. Does that, is that really right when you're vetting someone for the highest office in America? Does that whole premise, does that work?
Also,
that
looking forward, would you really want a president that is in control of a media outlet? That's questionable. You know, I would worry 100% about that. You would all of a sudden have to assume that there is bias there.
Well, and you're allowed to cover the president who you'd be running against. So the person you would run against, ultimately, if he were the nominee, but you wouldn't be able to investigate him. Now, whether or not they would change those rules if he were the nominee, I don't know. But that didn't sit right with me when I heard the editorial board. And even the weekend he announced that he was jumping into the race, you went to Bloomberg.com. And it was like there was no front page. You went to CNN, you had it, MSNBC, Fox. They all had the headline that he was jumping into the race and he had all this money to spend. And even though he's a late entry, there's a lot of possibilities there with that kind of money and that name recognition. But on Bloomberg.com, it didn't show him as a headline. It was the editorial column on the right-hand side that said how we're covering this race. And then it linked you to the editorial people, and some of them have left to actually cover the campaign and be part of his staff. But that column would then just say, hey, this is how we're going to handle this. We're going to cover him, kind of in a cursory way, but we're not going to investigate him, his enormous foundation, his finances, his business.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because in a way that's the right thing to do because you're so close to it, but you're also not being, you're also not able to do your job in that sense. So what do you do?
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to keep tracking what's going on there with a couple of late people coming into the race. Also, this one other one has happened here, and we've got is it ever okay? We were talking earlier about, is it okay to tell your daughter to hug people during the holidays? And a number of people weighed in after that Girl Scout PSA happened that said, you know, have a talk with your kid and tell her the consent is early in life and that you really don't need to force her. She doesn't owe anyone a hug, even if she gets a gift or that kind of thing. Do you have any thoughts about that, Lauren?
You know, I like
the idea.
You ever
forced to hug?
Yeah. Well, so I come from a family similar to yours, very loving and affectionate.
Hugging?
You know, yeah, hugging, kissing. And as a young child, you know, I was used to that. But as I got older, I felt a little bit more uncomfortable with the kissing of the lips with family members. So I just kind of stopped. And, you know, I went more for the hug. You know, I moved my head. And my family just accepted that. You know, some of my family members still do it, but they know that I am not comfortable with it. But it really is a preference. And I think that people should be allowed to know they can make those choices and not feel weird just because maybe they're the only one. So, yeah, let, you know, young girls and boys know, do what makes you feel comfortable. Also, feel free to tell me if someone specifically is making you feel uncomfortable.
See, I hear it all the time. I hear it outside my daughter's school. I hear it at birthday parties. I hear it at family events for sure. Hey, go give him a hug, you know, give him a hug. And it just seems harmless to me because I don't sense any discomfort that my daughter's feeling. And it's just very sweet. It's loving and on both sides. But we have heard from people who say, no, you're not always sure that family member, that often that's where abusers come from. And maybe you have to pick up on your kid's feelings and sort of understand, are they cool with it? Do they like it? Are they okay with it? And then maybe have a conversation with them. This is what we were discussing earlier afterwards to say, hey, just so you know, hugging's up to you and you do it if you want. You don't do it if you don't want.
Right. Well, think about a young child. It's already such a confusing situation, I would imagine, to have a family member or a family friend that you know is close to your parents and you are experiencing physical interactions that you are questioning, but you don't know because you know what I mean? Like mentally, they're like, this is a friend. This is a good person. Why don't I feel so good about this interaction?
Right.
Is this wrong? I don't know. What do I say? So, yeah, you might as well be proactive in something like that without getting too in-depth about what could be going on.
This has been educational for me because, as I said, my family, everyone hugs and kisses each other. Mm-hmm. And it just, it didn't even cross my mind that this was an issue. But apparently, I've learned something today, and apparently it is. We are going to be back with more here. And the news is coming up in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom here on WGN.